Please enjoy this video taking us into the talk.
Get as close in as you can. You got it.
Girls,
you're going to have to jump.
Jump? Are you insane?
Don't worry, I will catch you.
You gave us back.
I know, and it is the worst mistake I ever made. But you have to jump now.
It'll be okay.
Okay, girls. Marco, I will catch you, and I will never let you go again.
Not so fast!
No!
Let me go!
Marco! I'm coming, Marco, hang on! I got you.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that little clip from Despicable Me is the name of the movie. It's old at this point. If you've never seen it, you ought to take a look at it. It's delightful. So going into our talk today, I just want to ask you, have you just about had it? I mean, are you just, like, fed up to hear and enough is enough with what is going on in the world and all of the craziness and the zaniness and the confinement? And aren't you just sick and tired? You know, if the virus doesn't get us biologically, you know, it might do us all in emotionally and psychologically and everything that's going on right now. It's just craziness, what we're trying to adjust to. I had to make a quick run to the store, and when I got there, I only discovered that I couldn't go into the store because I had forgotten to take a mask with me, and I had to drive back home, get the stupid mask, and get back in the car and go back home. But it's crazy. And the weird things that we're looking to now, you know, people used to get together and discuss what medications they were taking and what their health regimens were and all of this. And now people are getting together to trade what's the latest TV series on, you know, BritBox and Acorn and Netflix and all of that kind of stuff. And we had two highlights here in my cul-de-sac this week. One of them is we had a wasp nest way at the peak of the roof, and so I called for somebody to come and take it down. And the guy showed up and said, we don't go on roofs anymore, so he constructed like a 25-foot pole with sections on it, you know, and it, going back and forth trying to knock that thing down, and all of a sudden I heard some unpolite language from him, one of the son of a variety. And I said, what's going on? And he said, the top pole is stuck in the siding. So he had to go get another, unscrew that, it's hanging at a 45-degree angle from the roof, and now he's whacking it with a bigger pole like this, and it's swinging back and forth, and it falls down, hits the roof. And I swear it came this close to impaling him as it came down the roof. And then a bigger highlight was, I was watching from my kitchen window. Two of my neighbors were busy staring at the ground, at their driveway and their grass. And this was going on for a half an hour. And I finally went out and I said, what are you guys doing? And it turns out they were watching this well-organized trail of ants from moving from one section of grass across a double driveway into another section of grass, and they're trying to figure out where they came from, where they were going, and just what was their plan. And you know what? I got right in line with them and tried to figure it out. And then somebody suggested, you know, you can't spray, you know, and get rid of them. And somebody else said, yeah, but then what would we have to do? I mean, it's just really, really an unprecedented, weird times. So to bring things kind of into perspective around the topic that we're talking about today, I want to share with you a nice little story that I found on the internet. And the story goes like this. There once lived a king who announced a prize to the artist who could paint the best painting that depicted peace. And many great painters from all over the world sent the king several of the best art pieces. And one of the pictures among the various masterpieces was of a very calm lake, perfectly mirroring peacefully towering snow-capped mountains. And overhead there was a blue sky with a few white fluffy clouds. The picture was perfect. And most of the people who viewed the pictures of peace from various artists thought for sure that this was the best of all of them. But when the king announced the winner, everyone was shocked. The picture which won the prize had mountains too, but it was rugged and bare. The sky looked very angry. There was lightning. This did not look peaceful at all. It looked like the artist had mistakenly submitted his painting depicting a storm rather than peace. But if anyone looked closely at the painting, you could see a tiny bush growing in the cracks of the rock. And in the bush, a mother bird had built her nest in the midst of the rush of angry weather. The bird sat in her nest in peace. Our topic today is a piece of the pie. That's peace spelled P-E-A-C-E. I thought that given all of the topsy-turvy things going on in the world, you know, our pandemic, massive demonstrations, the likes of which we haven't seen since the 60s, looting in major cities throughout the country on a scale that I think is really unprecedented, political situations on the federal, state, and local levels that seem to be fueled not just by opposing viewpoints, but by disrespect, contempt, and even open hatred. Confrontations between citizens and police everywhere. A definite rise of poverty in our country. A decline in education. And perhaps worst of all, unprecedented fear. Because we just don't know where it's all going. And it all comes down home to us personally as well. We worry, and understandably so, about our health, our jobs, our money, our children, our grandchildren, our rent or mortgage payments, our overall sense of comfort, our loss of stability, our loss of solid ground to stand upon, and an absence of certainty in our lives. And yes, a loss perhaps of our sense of peace. We desperately need, we crave a normalcy that was before. And we grow frightened, I think, as we slowly learn that that normalcy that we so miss and pray for its return, I think we're slowly learning that such normalcy maybe never was there to begin with. Maybe it was just an illusion. as I speak to more and more people, though. They express that they would be happy to return to just a part of what was, a piece of the peace pie, if you will. And as it continues, our unrest and our fears even can turn into anger and still greater frustration. After all, we're doing everything that we're supposed to be doing. Aren't we entitled to a break here? We've made sacrifices on behalf of others. We're making sacrifices on all kinds of levels. And by the way, don't you sometimes really upset because you feel that maybe you're being taken for granted and you're just plain tired of it all? I opened with that short story about the painter who painted the perfect picture of peace. The winning picture. The one that almost completely was so ominous looking. The one that showed the dark threat of a storm. The one that was so gray, so cold. The one that contained a tiny bird sitting in her nest at peace. Because I think that painting really does demonstrate true peace. And the truth is that most of the time, most of us refuse to see peace. We fail to know peace because we are so incredibly focused on the insanity of the world around us. We deprive ourselves of the peace that is ours for the taking because all of the inner turmoil and worry and restlessness and fear that we understandably yet senselessly actually have come to worship. I really do think that most of the world and most of us, to a certain extent anyway, well, maybe we don't want peace. We just want the symptoms and the chaos to go away. We look at peace as those brief times when all of the bad stuff disappears or stops happening. Those moments when we are worry-free. The world defines peace as the absence of pain, the absence of suffering, the absence of worry, the absence of war. All of these things that are temporary. Spirit, on the other hand, defines peace as rebirth and new life. A new awakening, and new awareness. The truth of the matter is, on the canvas of each of our lives, in the midst of all of the craziness and hurting and fear, there also is painted a symbol of peace in its truest sense. Represented today by that tiny bird and that tiny nest. Peace, real peace, the peace that Jesus was referring to when he spoke these words to his apostles. Peace I leave with you, my peace I give to you. I do not give to you as the world gives to you. Do not let your hearts be troubled. Do not be afraid. I am always with you. Love one another as I have loved you. That peace is the spiritual reality that is the eye of every storm, regardless of whether it is realized or not. That peace is never not here. That peace is never not with us. That peace is never lacking. So the question is, well, what do we have to do to realize it in our lives? And the simple answer I offer to you today is just one word. Trust. Peace doesn't require a leap of faith. Faith is the power to see those things not yet seen, the ability to see possibilities despite evidence to the contrary. But peace happens when we take a leap of trust. Like the cartoon video that we saw at the beginning of the talk, we have to trust that if we dare to take the leap, we will be caught and cared for. So, are we talking about trust in God? Well, yes, of course we are. But it's a little bit more complicated, as it also requires a trust in the God within. And we're going to talk about this a little bit more in just a bit. Last week, I was involved in a meeting in which the leader of a group was trying to communicate to someone in the group. And she started off saying very slowly and very deliberately with the words, "Please listen to me carefully. You do so much good work for us, and you always have done so. You are such a valuable part of what we're trying to accomplish, what we're trying to get done here, and we really value you and we need you. But I have to ask you, please, going forward, will you try not to be so critical of the people that you work with, your colleagues?" The next day, the individual who heard that message resigned, saying she was quitting the team because she felt unappreciated based upon what was said to her. She obviously didn't listen to what was said to her. She listened instead to what she was feeling. Yesterday, I asked a neighbor how she was doing, and she answered with a shrug, and she said she was bored to death. She added that every day had become like Groundhog Day, and she had nothing to look forward to. And it was terribly judgmental on my part, I admit, but I thought and I said, "You're right. You are bored to death. You've forgotten about the gift of life that you have. You may not have stopped breathing, but you've decided to stop living just because you could no longer exercise the same routines that you were doing before the pandemic." How many times have we heard somebody say, "You made me feel sad," or "He made me feel dumb or stupid," or "She made me feel useless and worthless," and on it goes. If you have ever felt anything like these examples, I'm not saying what you felt was not real, because it was. What I am saying is that you have given away your power. Imagine allowing somebody else to define you and shape your destiny by the words that come out of your mouth. Nobody has that power unless you give that power to them. Regardless of what anybody ever said to you, nobody has the power to make you feel anything. How you decide to feel in response to anything is directly related to the measure of peace that you know in your life. What I'm talking about is not easy, I understand, and that's for sure. All of us have stuff that has been tossed at us for years by so many people. So much of it piles up into a big, giant lump of resentment. But all resentment does is choke off potential. It cheats us. It deprives us of our possibilities. It limits our participation in the promise of God. God never stops loving us. Absolutely never. In God, we always remain precious. But if we're not willing to trust enough in that love to make the jump, it limits God, actually. It keeps God from being able to lead you to the miracles that have your name on them. In preparation for this talk, I listened to the sermon by Reverend James Lawson at the funeral of John Lewis. If you haven't heard it, do yourself a favor and give a listen. I'm sure it will come up if you Google it. If you have trouble finding it, let me know and I'll send you the link. In that talk, he shared how a group of civil rights leaders got together and decided to desegregate the city of Nashville way back in the 60s. He also shared that he was scared to death as they had to prepare themselves for the possibility that they would face violence. Not do violence, but be subject to and have to face violence. But there was one other takeaway from this talk that I heard. This get-together that they had was not a structured get-together. There was not a resonating call that went out. People, civil rights leaders, came forth spontaneously. Various leaders simply recognized the wrong and responded, intent upon doing whatever God called them to do. In other words, John Lewis, the man whom he was eulogizing, did not realize his greatness for his legislative service. He didn't realize it for his demonstrations or whatever else he might have done, but his greatness was a result of his awareness of what God was calling him to do. Peace. The peace we all have been blessed with, in the words of Jesus, is all about having trust in God. But ultimately, trust in God makes no sense unless you understand that it absolutely necessarily extends to trusting the God within you. It means trusting yourself. It means turning a deaf ear to all of the noise, to every word that argues against or denies the Christ within is alive and is the source of all your good. It means accepting that you are the Lamb of God. In the Hebrew scriptures, when God summoned Moses at the site of the burning bush and commissioned him to negotiate the release of the Israelites, Moses responded saying, "Not me, Lord. You got the wrong man. I'm not the right person for this job. I've never been a good speaker. I cannot go and articulate what you want in front of the Pharaoh. Find someone else." And God was insistent with Moses, as God really is insistent with us, and said, "Nope. This is all yours. You got this." And when the apostle Thomas was told by the other apostles that they had seen the risen Christ, he doubted. Despite seeing and being and living in the presence of the Christ reality for years, he doubted. His doubts weren't in some outside God in the heavens. His doubts stemmed from his lack of belief in himself and the possibility that the miracle of eternal life was there for him to grab onto anytime that he wanted to. If you need to touch the wounds in order to believe, then guess what? You're looking to the proof according to the standards of the world and not according to the standards of spirit. There's one more aspect of peace that we have to talk about. Paradoxically, peace, as wonderful and fulfilling as it is, sometimes can be awfully, awfully inconvenient. Over 100 years ago, as the United States entered into World War I, the president at that time, Woodrow Wilson, sold the war to the people on the basis that this would be the war to end all wars. I pick up on that theme this morning. To end all of the skirmishes, the chaos, the pain in our lives, we have to be ready, willing, and able to go to war with ourselves. We have to be willing to fight this war to end all wars. And I'm not making any claims that the nutsiness, the insanity is going to go away, that the troubles and problems will forever disappear from your life. What I'm saying is that if you do the work so that you let go of your dependence on others and lock on the truth that Spirit is your source, then as God said to Moses, you got this. You will be way better than all right. You will be at peace. And you can have as many pieces of the pie in as many flavors as you wish. And you will be free to love as God loves you. I truly believe the day will come when all of the insanity of the world will end. Until that day, at long last, is here, we can still know peace, we can feel peace, we can realize peace, the peace that already shines in each and every one of us. If we do, it'll start small. The hurts will be a little less painful. The disruptions will be just a little bit less disruptive. And those things that truly frighten us will become at least a little bit less scary. Not only that, it will be contagious. And it really, really, really will help to change the world. As we sing every single Sunday, let there be peace on earth, and let it begin with me.